Welcome to the A News Podcast. This is episode 71 for July 6, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information, and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian, anarchistnews.org. What's new this week? IGD, we are being doxxed from It's Going Down. One of the sides of the doxxing crew takes the opportunity to spread information about how to avoid being on the receiving end. Live by the dox, die by the dox. I don't know, seems accurate. Quote, we particularly encourage those of us who may feel off the radar to examine security practices as we have seen a willingness to target less visible or publicly active friends, both for harassment and for information mining. Individual security is about keeping all of us safe, unquote. There is also more info in the brief comments thread.
Peru, act of vandalism on the Nautilus Aquarium. From Act for Freedom Now, a pretty short communique, quote, the level of devastation carried out by the bodies of power has reached the point where such places, like the aquarium and others, are protected by the people's consensus, dictated by ignorance, by the laws that defend them, the false representation of beauty, by entertainment to others' detriment, and also by false critics, welfare groups, associations, pacifists who weigh things up and beg the anthropocentric speciesist enemy. In short, we believe that it's necessary to put an end to everything that violates free and wild nature. And the path that denies these dynamics is this: attack. Freedom can't be asked for. You don't beg for. It won't be the result of rules, laws, or reforms. We need to crush fear. Freedom is here and needs to be left as it is. Unquote. What is the Dora Liberation Army? Pop culture references for the loss.
Anarchist informal encounter attacked by political police. From Pramen. Pramen is the source for news about repression of anarchists in Eastern Europe, at least in the English language, which, unfortunately, means a lot of bad news. This piece describes the disruption of an anarchist camping trip by forces from the quote-unquote anti-extremist bureau. And by disruption, I mean, sadly, torture and interrogation. Quote, now my condition is not good enough to draw large-scale conclusions. I'll just tell one thing. Okay, we were left beaten and humiliated. Well, the police managed to have got informed about our closed meeting and to disrupt it. But they couldn't do anything with our solidarity, with our belief in our ideas. We have already survived a lot of things. We'll survive this too. Without any pathos, that hounds haven't achieved anything. After a bit of sleep and treatment, I'll continue sharing my thoughts. Unquote.
Static continues. July 2018, from 325. 325 is back, hooray. This is a list of things they're paying attention to, including plans to post a zine called Nightwatch, info about a final straw broadcast on Indonesian prisoners, conspiracy of Cells of Fires members who are in prison, people convicted for events in Chile, and a piece relating to that Marafin bank case in Athens, Greece. Welcome back, 325.
Dispatch from Occupy ICE Philly. From RED, aka Radical Education Department, by Arthur Burbridge. A first-person account of events in the streets. It's always at least somewhat useful to get first-hand accounts of actions, although this one devolves into normal activist encouragement at the end of the account. However, it continues into more tactical and strategic thinking, and there it has a bit more balance, at least to my jaundiced eye. Quote, but the event also raises an important question for Philly anarchists and the other parts of the radical left beyond the socialist scene. Is this event worth throwing support behind? What about the major differences in ideology between anarchists and groups like the PSL or Philly Socialists? The occupation is mounting a clear challenge to a key local branch of fascistic power in this country, and it's helping build radical militancy and connections among anti-capitalists here. For anarchists or other radical anti-capitalists to sit this out would be an important missed opportunity. We can't just wish away major ideological differences. They are real and create tensions that can't be ignored, but there are also levels of coalition, the lowest being merely tactical unity without strategic or ideological agreement. This is highly limited, but it's still important even as a first step, particularly if we're going to go on the attack against an increasingly audacious state, unquote.
Can anarchists give Trump the welcome he deserves? From Freedom News, a call for more or less creative responses to Trump's imminent visit to the UK. Quote, It doesn't have to simply be black bloc activity either. There are myriad ways in which the point can be made. I noticed a crowdfunded activity to install a massive inflatable baby Trump above the Capitol, for example. This might not achieve a great deal, but it makes a point, and maybe there will be people who are more willing to help that than to get their paint bombs out. It's all good, and while I think we should push protests down radical routes when and where possible, we're having trouble simply getting our own house in order, so I'm not going to criticize anyone for actually getting something done, unquote. Ah, yes, getting something done. We should all get something done. Something is great.
Indonesia. Update on the anarchist prisoners in Yogyakarta from Anarchist BC. With Duterte in the headlines for brutal treatment of people he doesn't like, Indonesia is almost competing with Russia for a scary place for anarchists. Quote, as of May 1st, 2018, to today, July 4th, the anarchist prisoners in Yogyakarta have still not faced court proceedings. Information received is that the anarchist prisoners should have been transferred to a prison in Sleman on June 29th, as the prosecutor's office has been holding them in Yogyakarta police station since May 1st for the investigation process. However, the planned transfer was canceled, and the period of detention at Polda Yogyakarta has been extended until July 30th on the grounds of further investigation. Our prediction is the extended investigation process is due to this case being politicized. It's evident by the many opinions that appear on the surface that the May 1st action was an act of opposition against the government, unquote. There are also links for more info.
The State Against Climate Change, response to Christian Parenti. From Black Rose Federation. Perhaps Black Rose has found its actual anarchist role here? Debating with someone who is even more liberal about the fallacy of using the state to fix a problem that the state created. Sounds good to me. Quote, it is only a conscious working class battling with the interest of the youth, future generations, and the planet at heart that provides hope. To rely on the state and the bourgeoisie is sheer folly, given that they're the reason we're in this mess. While the example of taking matters into our own hands can be expected to provoke a concerted backlash on the part of the privileged, it can also open the horizon of possibility that is currently veiled by the ethos of capitalist realism, which denies the very destructiveness of the bourgeois society while prioritizing production and consumption above all else. Unquote.
One hand clapping for Kanye West. From The Anvil by Alex Gorayan. I think I've liked everything I've ever read by Gorayan, which is saying a lot. And this piece not only brings back his voice, but also pokes the Anvil Project, which is worthy of waking up. This essay is a perfect example of the perspective of the Anvil, as it takes a pop culture reference and spins it into a thoughtful reflection of larger issues from an anarchist perspective. Oh, and it has a sense of humor. Quote, to be clear, I think Kanye is one part hack and one part provocateur, but my opinion holds very little water. Exactly zero of my friends habitually come to me for my knowledge on pop culture or rap. So let's move on to what was false about his statement. In a consumerist, comfort-driven society, the word choice suggests an effortless and even facile decision. Such a word minimizes the brutality of slavery and invisibilizes the resistance. In fact, Native and African people engaged in constant, multi-form, heroic, and often bloody resistance against the regime of slavery in North America for the entirety of its 400-year history. Progressive whites and institutions like the New York Times that rushed to condemn Kanye and win cookies have a consistent position of recognizing the brutality of the regime of chattel slavery, but only as a way to overshadow subsequent forms of racism and exploitation from which they directly or indirectly benefit. Unquote. Well worth reading.
The Local Kids, Issue 1, Summer 2018, from thelocalkids.noblogs.org. Local Kids is a new site which describes itself as, quote, a compilation of text, a contribution to the correspondence between those who desire anarchy and subversion, unquote. While the Pink Courier typeface, or whatever, on black is not easy to read, I'm pretty into this aesthetic, for whatever it's worth. Very new take on retro. This issue one is a PDF of roughly 20 pages. The TOC's tools to capture, tame, and restrain about IT giants, smoke signals about the aftermath of the G20 in Hamburg, a handful of objections, which article is also its own entry on A News and follows, and to start over, which first appeared in January 2018 in a French anarchist bulletin. Quote, to start over always, that is the prospect, which can seem kind of tragic, Of all those who are at war against this world of infinite horrors, along the way, some fall under the blows. Others don't resist the siren song that calls to resign oneself and get back in line. Some even make an outright U-turn. The others that persist in fighting with ups and downs have to find strength and determination to start over again each time. However, on second thought, the tragedy is not to start over, to start from scratch, but to abandon and betray oneself, unquote.
A handful of objections from thelocalkids.noblogs.org. This is a reflection on, I wouldn't say review of, one of the pieces in the new journal Backwoods, one written by Bellamy, called An Invitation to Desertion. Quote, I do think we should attempt to create the conditions for self-realization. This can mean looking for less hostile surroundings. What defines as hostile depends greatly on the project and on the individual. But I don't think our projects will take shape totally outside of the existing social relations. And while the concept of desertion may be based on the illusion that there is a safe place to escape to, I don't want to reject all of the practices it contains, unquote. There is some informed and interesting, if unnecessarily snarky, commentary in the comment thread, but then snark can't really ever be said to be necessary, I guess. While I would agree with one commenter that this is overly long and mildly inconsistent, this is the kind of thoughtful feedback that writers dream of getting.
Public statement from the Conspiracy of Cells of Fire, CCF, Mexico, from 325. This is a statement rebutting an endorsement of the newly elected Mexican president by some putative anarchist. This statement also suggests reinstituting the Mexico Conspiracy of Cells of Fire. Quote, we fully agree with Cuspido that the creation of an autonomous anarchist movement or an autonomous anarchist pole for the organization of the anarchist guerrilla or an international anarchist federation is a step backwards in the development of the new illegalism and the informalist tendency. A return to the past, to the age of the schemes that put us at risk by returning to a specific organization of classical synthesis, an ancient instrument, a rusty scalpel. We agree with Cuspido that forming a structured organization through the creation of assemblies would inevitably lead to the creation of specific organizations, thus distorting the object of informality, deviating from the objectives we have set for ourselves, unquote. And I rarely get to say this, but this translation was excellent, as far as I can tell, of course, including not only coherent sentences and clear punctuation, but also clarifying notes on the cultural references, etc. Thanks to all translators of anarchist writing everywhere, but special thanks to those who do it well.
Anarchist zines and pamphlets published in June 2018 from Sprout Distro. Anarchism and Revolutionary Strategy, Insurrectionary Councilism by Art Burbridge of Radical Education Department. Anarchist Wallpaper No. 4, the Underhill Distro pamphlet of Sever's articles from Black Seed. Phantasma on Clandestinity, Beyond Support on the Lock Street events in Hamilton, Ontario. Felix's Little Red and Black Book, which is deterrent cartoons of Felix the Cat. Anarchy in a Small Pond, on anarchy away from big urban centers. Live from the Trenches, letters from inside about the uprising at the James T. Vaughan Correctional Center in Delaware. Anathema 6, Words of Fire 9, with writings by prisoners. And finally, Using Space No. 11, about squats and social centers, etc., from Europe.
The Invention of the Tribe, English version from Return Fire Volume 5, from Anonymous. This seems to be a piece from France on Scott's book, The Art of Not Being Governed. I didn't read it extremely carefully, but it seems like a review of the theory of that book. That is, the significance of zomia, of crops that are less state-prone, the desire of some people to live without a state, and people's capacity to withdraw from existing states, and so on. Towards the end of the piece, the title becomes more applicable. Quote, most of the hill peoples of Southeast Asia didn't have what we regard as proper ethnic identities. They identified themselves often by the name of a place, the people of this or that valley or catchment basin, or by a lineage or family group. Their identity varied according to the person they were addressing. Many names were implicitly relational, the people from up high, the people of the Western Ridge, making sense only as an element in the relational whole. Other names used were those given by foreigners, as was the case with the Mieo. Most of the hill dwellers had a repertoire of identities which they could use according to context. A person's ethnic identity would be, in a sense, the repertoire of their possible performances in the context in which they were displayed. Ethnicity is not a given, but a choice. Unquote. I'm always suspicious of anthropology, and I wonder where this information comes from, but if nothing else, it is a very worthy prod to our imaginations.
Concerning the recent raids across Europe, from Bordered by Silence. This was translated from the German, and the introductory remarks are instructive, as is the body of the piece, an interview of someone about the events of G20 and the aftermath, which continues. Quote, the searches continued, totaling about 60 at present. The police say there are about 3,500 ongoing investigations. The cops are gathering and analyzing tons of material and data and are trying to frighten their opponents and to control the discourse through intensive collaboration with the press, using very uncritical journalists. With the closing of indie media Linksunten by administrative means, the radical left and anarchist opposition lost one of its main platforms. We lost one of our main means of communicating, of organizing, of analyzing what happened, and also of countering the prevailing propaganda. The media's coverage has been similar to what happens in France. Demonstrations with monstrous police violence are accompanied by a discourse about how the nasty black bloc caused order to break down. We're dealing with a terrible capitalist violence that is countered by the occasional riot, and then the neoliberal order defends itself by denouncing the extremists who supposedly threaten democracy. It's clear the G20 leaders and their justice and administrative systems are at the root of the demise of democracy. Unquote.
Online release of Return Fire Volume 5 from The Collective. As indicated by the preceding sketch, Return Fire 5 is now available online. Per usual, they have a color version and a black and white version available for download. Usually well worth reading.
Anarchism is Movement, Tomás Ibáñez, from autonomies.org. This is the announcement of an English translation of a piece by Ibáñez, who is the author of many pieces on the Autonomies page, and who has been active, it sounds like, for his whole life. Quote, many were the events around which anarchists gathered in numbers unimaginable before the explosion of the events of May 68. In fact, the resurgence of anarchism has not ceased to make us jump, so to speak, from surprise to surprise. May 68 was a surprise for everyone, including, of course, for the few anarchists who we were wandering the streets of Paris a little before. Spain immediately after Franco was another surprise, above all for the few anarchists who nevertheless continued to struggle during the last years of the dictatorship. The anarchist effervescence of the years 2000 is finally a third surprise that has nothing to envy in those that preceded it, unquote. It's nice to hear from someone who's been paying attention for some decades and is not as jaded as I am, or at least he wasn't when he wrote this.
Fundraising, Total Solidarity T-shirt for Anarchist Prisoners in Yogyakarta, Indonesia, from Anarchist BC. This announcement is for a black design on a white t-shirt. The design is pretty, and as far as I can tell, the screening is well done. There's a typo, singular anarchist instead of the plural anarchists, but that just adds to the message. There is info about sizes and how to order.
An anarchist report back and some embedded critiques of Occupy... No, an anarchist report back and some embedded critiques of hashtag Occupy ICE Philadelphia. From Philly Anti-Capitalist, or phlanticap.noblogs.com. This is the second of three of this week's ICE action report backs, and like the others, it involves both first-person reporting and analysis of the tactics of the day. Quote, anarchists attempted to open up conversations to share thoughts, coordinate, and deepen analysis. The socialists, marshals, and other self-appointed leaders were neutral or even hostile to these autonomous initiatives. The suggestion of open and horizontal discussion seemed to frighten and upset the marshals, who quickly swooped in and informed us that they were meeting and that we were welcome to send a delegate from our quote-unquote group if we wanted. A bottle thrower was shamed. Barricades were alternatively applauded and criticized throughout the night. Anarchists in Philly have been busy for years attacking capital, the state, and fascists. There is a certain familiarity with occupation and conflict that many of us felt we could contribute. It would be an understatement to say that we were disappointed, but not surprised, at how the marshals behaved. Unquote. Bottom line, too many concessions to the cops. Aren't there always?
The Ice Age is Over, from CrimeThink, because who else would use a title with such clever and entirely overblown wordplay? The third of three pieces on ICE this week, this one with info from Portland and Atlanta, and all the photos. There is some empty back and forth in the comments, and then a knockout one from Anonymous. I love Anonymous the best. That talks about naivety, etc.
Anarchist sues Seattle police for breaking agreement. From crosscut.com. If anarchist were a label with a more stable definition, this might be a man bites dog story. As it is, it's just someone suing the cops for not following their own rules. Might be instructive for some about cop behavior. Probably not, though. We all read the headlines, right? Oh, here's a mildly funny side note. Hyra is the bad acting cop in question in the story. Quote, Hyra did not respond to an emailed request for comment. He currently works as a detective for the Office of Police Accountability, SPD's internal unit for investigating complaints against officers. Unquote.
Media. Four new zines about struggles in Mexico. From It's Going Down. Wild and Criminal, Anthology of Prison Chronicles. Anarchist Organizing and Solidarity Inside and Outside of Mexican Prisons. An Interview. Community Struggle in Political Repression in Aloxochitlan de Flores Magón. The Case of Miguel Peralta Betanzos. There's Nothing Anarchist About Ecofascism. All available online, of course.
Affinity, Beyond Friendship, from Submedia. A 3-minute video with clips from the city, with a voiceover about what affinity is and how it's different from friendship. Of course, these brief attention deficit catering clips are more about poetry than about clarity. So have fun.
Podcast, Anarchy Radio, 7/3/2018. Always an hour. A-News callers got negative feedback from Jay-Z's listeners. Jay-Z quotes Melania's jacket, and everything that Jay-Z doesn't understand is still postmodern. As it has been for 10 years, Jay-Z is shocked that there is an anarchist who disagrees with him. Quote, who really cares? Unquote.
From Embers, new content in June 2018, from North Shore Counter Info. Quote, From Embers is a regular anarchist podcast produced in Kingston, Ontario. They produce a few episodes a month about actions and projects going on in so-called Canada that inspire or about topics that they think will be relevant to anarchists living north of the border. This month, there are 4 original episodes, unquote. Each about an hour on a range of topics. I'll be checking out the one about an anarchism without individualism.
The Final Straw Radio, Occupy ICE PDX, and J20 Case Updates, an hour and 20 minutes. Quote, this week, we're featuring 2 interviews. The first is an interview from the IGD cast with someone affiliated with Occupy ICE PDX, blocking the Immigration Detention Center in Portland, Oregon. The second was a chat we had with a supporter of the J20 arrestees. From among 230 people rounded up during the inauguration protest of January 20th, 2017 in Washington, D.C., and still facing over 60 years in prison each, unquote. The J20 have had all their charges dropped. Woohoo.
Not anarchist. There will be no elections. From edicionesineditos.com. From an announcement on Facebook, this is a declaration against elections for the mega election on Sunday that just elected many, many politicians, including a president. Quote, as we have been denouncing, our recent protests have been to demand that the Electoral Institute of Michoacán does not install polling stations in our community, since by agreement of the neighborhood assemblies and general assemblies, we have agreed to not allow this. That as a community, we are waiting for citizen consultation to move from the system of political parties to a system of uses and customs, to pick our own authorities and exercise our own self-governance, as has already been ordered by the Superior Court of the Electoral Tribunal of the Judicial Branch of the Federation of Mexico, with headquarters in the city of Toluca, State of Mexico, unquote.
Of the week, no borders. Everywhere in the news and in conversations these past few weeks have been discussions about immigration and the policies of the USA government, especially that of separating migrant parents from their children. For anarchists, there is justifiable need to abolish the borders between nations, societies, cultures, and whatever else separates and defines us. Outside of a revolution, how do we do this though? How do we create widely accessible points of intervention that provide direct leverage on the infrastructure with which the border is built upon? People need a pressure point, a place they can converge to go on the offensive. What does this look like, and what lessons have we learned? We can look at Calesis, Anarchists in Greece squatting giant buildings to help provide space for migrants. No border camps of the past. Anarchists against the wall in Israel. And the recent occupation in Portland and Atlanta. With these past two occupations, some questions about how do we counter the politics of leaderships, inaction, and shame? How do we build our power and keep it anti-state, even as the liberals and peace police are actively trying to strip it from us? And after the event unfolds, how do we keep these direct actions alive? Ariel, welcome back.
Thanks, Aragorn. How are you?
I'm A-OK.
Excellent. This question is challenging and interesting for me. I think what's interesting about the question is that the whole last paragraph and the questions that it answers could arguably be said to be more general and not be specifically related to the topic. This is challenging for me because tackling the question of borders is not one that's ever been in the forefront of my mind or my politics.
I was going to say, if you've ever seen a map of the area where the Border Patrol has like carte blanche, we in fact weren't raised and born in that band. In other words, anyone who lives in the coast basically is in the area where the border control has control or has a certain amount of power. But both of us grew up in the Midwest and pretty far away from borders.
It's true. This is definitely not even a thing that I knew that people talked about even as a good liberal in the Midwest until I moved to California and I became friends with anarchists. I guess because I don't have a good answer, and I do like a lot of the work that a lot of people are doing around supporting migrants and immigrants, and but I don't know if those are anarchist projects because I've never particularly put a lot of thought into them. I definitely think that they are projects of human scale. I don't have a good answer. Maybe I should have let you go first.
Well, you know, as I was reading it, I actually do think that I have a strong opinion about what the answer to this would be. And that is that I'm basically hostile to the actions of blocking ICE and doing what I would call like performative, but not directly active activities. I think that if anarchists really care about the question of migrants in the 21st century, we should be developing an underground railroad and not turn it into a confrontation with the state sort of an issue, but a directly help migrants by helping shuttle them around, you know, helping put, you know, one or two up in our home and basically tying our fate to the fate of people who are more truly illegal than we are. And I think that you know, you put yourself in good company when you do something like that, when you argue that, both in the sense of hiding people like from in the 60s and the actual Underground Railroad, you know, when during slavery years. And that puts us also in the company of the Greeks, you know, more explicitly and directly and materially helping out migrants rather than in the space of liberals who like to hold signs and demonstrate in front of, you know, places of power.
I definitely have more appreciation for the approach of subverting the powers that be as opposed to contesting them. And, you know, it's hard for the illegalism of it all to not be appealing. And I suppose, I mean, you know, arguably us being in California and the battle at the border in Mexico being so deadly and so dangerous and so real, you feel like it wouldn't be that hard to plug in to being a part of a path from people coming up north, making their way farther north of us, or even east from where we are. It's an interesting idea, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, there's an anarchist way to do it, and there's a way to do it that helps pre-existing groups. But, you know, I think the right. place to start would be to say, do we have 10 households that can put up, you know, 20 to 40 people, and basically as a block approach migrant groups that might share our interests and see if we can do something autonomous but you know, connected to those groups. And,
right.
And you begin.
For sure.
And so the question for anarchists then is, most anarchists don't have the space to store 2 to 4 people, you know, a small family. And that means that by and large, anarchists don't have a lot to offer in terms of a project like this. And so if that's the case, is it a better activity for anarchists to change their lives so they do have resources like this? Or is it the anarchist's role to jump from summit to summit and to sort of valorize that solo traveler person that moves around and moves from hotspot to hotspot? Because it seems very much like most of our press prioritizes that hotspot to hotspot activity, that performative kind of protest.
Well, I agree that most of our press does valorize that. But I want to say that you're creating a false binary there in the hope that there are actually more options than those two options. I think that, I don't know. I don't know how much of these projects are actually connected to the migrant people who are fighting these fights and the people who are supporting them.
Well, I think from the anarchist.
But I feel like if, you know.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I feel like if it were what I wanted to do and I didn't have a house where I could house a family and this were a really important issue to me, then, you know, you find out what you just find the right organization and you go and you ask them the right question. And what is that you need? And how do I make what it is that you need part of the anarchist project of my life? And maybe if it's what's really important to you, you have to make some compromises there, but it's what you have to do. We have friends in Saskatchewan who their entire political fight is the native fight. And while they're absolutely anarchists and they have decided that this is the most important project that an anarchist can engage in because they're literally living on somebody else's land. And that might be a different conversation, or the context of that question might be different if it were happening here, but maybe not. But for them, but it's happening there, and that's what it looks like. And they really do some amazing things in the face of some intensely fucked up shit.
But that's not a border struggle or an immigration struggle.
No, I understand it's not a border struggle or an immigration struggle. But what I'm saying is that it's a project that off the cuff, you might have some critical thought about whether or not that's actually an anarchist project, is my point.
I mean, if it involves the state, it's an anarchist project, yes?
After a fashion, yes. But I don't think I would equivocally say that's true.
No, as far as I'm concerned.
Or unequivocally, sorry.
If it involves the police, i.e. the arm of the state, mm-hmm. then opposing it is right. an anarchist project.
Okay. So do you think that there's a whole bunch of questions in the last paragraph.
Yeah.
And do you think that, what do you think about these questions regarding the direction that you and I have taken this conversation?
How do we build our power and keep it anti-state, even as the liberals and peace police are actively trying to strip it from us? Well, you evade the liberals and peace police by stopping having your activity be performative and instead bring it into your home.
Yeah, if you don't put it on a stage for people to see.
Yeah. After the event unfolds, how do we keep these direct actions alive? Well, you know, again, I don't think that most border activity is direct action. I think it's performative protest type action, unless they're referring to, you know, the great event, capital T, capital E. And then, you know, we should have no problem at all because the event will subsume all opposition. But really, probably at the heart of their question is, how do we create widely accessible points of intervention that provide direct leverage on the infrastructure with which the border is built upon? And that's the hard question, because that is basically a question about disassembling the state. And I feel like you can't disassemble the state until you have a general population that's kind of on board with the project of disassembling the state, right? I mean, you know, if cops have undependable paychecks, all of a sudden the infrastructure that supports the state starts to fade from view.
Well, yeah, that's definitely one way to get there. Yeah. And I also think that there's definitely something about what border you're talking about. Because I've talked to people from Canada who talk about these tiny little points of intersection in these little no-name, nowhere towns where, you know, there's no checkpoint and there's a fence, but that you can cross relatively freely as long as you avoid the occasional, you know, spot checks or whatever, the helicopter flyer, whatever it is exactly. And, you know, it's Canada, so it's not desert and 100 degrees and
it is the middle of nowhere.
Well-intentioned. It is the middle of nowhere, but I also don't think that, what's the name of the citizen militia that patrols the Mexican border? I can't remember what it's called. Those terrible, horrible people. I don't know that there's a Canadian version of that.
Sure. No, of course.
So my point is that, you know, that exists, but this is a much less contentious, not just border, but issue in general coming from the north. And so is that a pressure point, or is it not just because it doesn't matter? Whereas, of course, the border into Mexico is an entire, like, you know, politically and socially and even psychologically, just on every level possible, it's a completely different game. I don't know if that was a useful point. I don't know. That was my thought. There's this way that we talk about borders like they're all the same, but as if everyone knows what you mean when you say it. And I don't think.
Yeah, but that's because we're only really talking about the Mexican border when we say border.
But I don't actually think that that's true. I think especially now there are plenty of people who are talking about entering the United States from the Middle East and, you know, the refugees fleeing Africa. While I think historically that is true, I think that's less true in the last few years. But I don't know. I don't know what my point is.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that those examples of borders are entirely political borders, meaning that, you know, for instance, the U.S.'s intransigence about Syrian refugees, like, how do you do a direct action to change that? You know, do you buy an airplane, fly to Syria or to one of those camps and fly people over? In other words, those particular fights would be so resource intensive, they're beyond what we can imagine.
Right.
Whereas we know that many people have crossed the border successfully from south, and those people can directly be helped if anarchists actually have the resources to do it. But in lieu of having those resources, we perform opposition. And I believe, especially in the context of the Trump administration, they are happy for us to be performative. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think it's all woven into the greater plan.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
July 7th, 2018. Welcome to part one of Weekly Assertion, a constantly new and blue segment on the E-News podcast where your host uses telepathy to reify the knowledge that you asked for help so you don't have to. Today will be a journey of splaining, splaining, and building versus maintaining splaining, and since consistency is the foundation of trust, and I consistently hide the point of this segment like a needle in a permaculture haystack, I imagine that means I'm pretty trustworthy. Trust is pretty hard to come by these days, especially for human anarchists. There's a lot of signal noise out there, so it's hard to tell when we're talking with someone with common ideas, or if we're just talking to ourselves, and I believe I usually am. Anarchists are usually super into building and destroying things, but today we focus on building as a fun prank on a pre-friend of mine. Quality seeks quality, and when we are building solo, it can be a little bit of a drag. To build with others, though, costs trust, and the oft-overlooked source of trust, I'd assert, is a campaign to maintain. Displaying persistence, calm under pressure, and a desire to learn while helping someone else is a great start. Maintaining is a sort of valley in the distance that is easier to overlook than to see. It is a lesser-known aspect of building because process is harder to commoditize than outcomes. And so unless you've been there and back, you might not know it exists at all. From far away, it simply looks like a flat plane. However, as you continue moving forward, you realize, oh, holy shit, this got complex. Now I gotta scale down, cross to the other side, and finally climb back up again. So folks who haven't been to this valley feel they understand complex phenomena with far greater precision, coherence, and depth than they actually do. When asked if they know how something works, they say yes. But when presented with a request to write a detailed instruction manual, they say no. Lots of folks quit when they get to the valley. Sometimes you should, and sometimes persistence pays off. It's lonely down there. You probably won't have much of a social life, and the news tends to glamorize pre- and post-valley. So the focus on pre and post are compounded, amplifying the myth that there is no valley. This is one of the challenges with the neonates, always asking for instructions on what to do and why we aren't doing more. Since they have not yet been there and back, they do not yet understand the complexities and nuance of what they are asking. They want to build something and then hand it off to someone else to maintain. Maintaining is where appropriate education is earned, but it's easy to miss the point. Speaking of missing the point, remember Occupy? Oh yeah, I barely do either, but boy did they have their shit backwards. So online, the 1% rule pertains to the participation in an internet community. It suggests that only 1% of the users of an online platform actively create new content. The other 99% tend to share, edit, or lurk. So in order to avoid doing any real work of my own, I'll just plagiarize that guy Debord who said plagiarism is necessary. Now, in order that I might spectacle-splain, I'll plagiarize a little further because this guy is really good at sounding like he knows what he's talking about. All that was once directly lived has now become mere representation. The decline of being into having and having into merely appearing. The cargo cult of anarchism is to appear trustworthy, rather than to display that one is trustworthy. These cults of personality, in my not-so-humble opinion, do a real injustice to the mostly thankless dedication of those away from keyboard on that maintain game. If this makes me sound like a spectacle justice warrior, I assure you, things are not always as they appear. In closing, since I want to be respectful of your time, I have divided this segment into two parts. The second has an additional 5 minutes of content, and if you're the kind of person who likes circular reasoning and absurdity, drop by our public bus living room at the IRC, and I would be delighted to share it with you.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week it was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie, narrated by Chisel and a friend. The weekly assertions was written and read by Suds. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org.